Sebastian, those locks. Like, I do appreciate it. I know you shaved and you've got the mustache going on. But the long hair. I know who the real Metal Lord is. It's not a movie that just came out.
Sure. Are we actually... Is this a recording or are we just talking casually right now?
This is recording.
Wait, this is the recording. Okay.
I am curious. Will, I know you've cut the hair. It's awesome. Sure. The glasses bring it together. Can you play an instrument?
I played the violin for 12 years. I have not played it since high school.
That's not very metal. I'm looking for electric guitar. Like, I'll take the tambourine over there. I mean, I think the violin's pretty sick, but...
Sure.
All right.
The fiddle.
Well, this is my failed pitch to get you to start a band with me, but...
Yeah. All right. Well, fair enough. Am I allowed to keep the long hair for the wedding?
I think so. You just gotta gotta wear nice clothes.
Okay. I didn't know if... Would your fiancé be mad at me if I came with long hair? I wasn't quite sure.
Well, this isn't like, London in the 1950s. Sure. I think we're okay.
Cool. All right.
Yeah, come as you are, I suppose.
Sure.
Yeah, you could tie it in a ponytail. I don't know. Do what you want
to
do.
It's up to you.
Yeah. Okay. What are we talking about? Oh, yes. We are talking about movies. Welcome once again to Cinemaholics, the Major Motion Podcast, where we talk about the biggest, best films coming to theater streaming online. I'm John Negroni from the San Francisco Bay Area, film editor for theyoungfolks.com. From Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, he's a news and entertainment writer at Collider. It's Will Ashton.
Hey.
Ambulance, Sonic. Those are the two movies. But I'm going to hijack this. I had a plan, and because you were like, oh, what are we talking about? Ambulance, Sonic? Yeah, Ambulance and Sonic.
Sure.
This is now an RRR podcast.
Well, we're going to talk about that next week, right?
See, I lied to you. No, we're talking about it right now. I know. I want to talk about it right now. RRR, Rise, Roar.
Well, I'm excited for you.
Rise, Roar, Revolt?
Yeah. Rise. Yeah. Is that what it is?
I think it's Rise, Roar. I could have the order wrong.
Yeah.
The Tollywood film. I thought it was Bollywood. You corrected me. You were like, no. Facts.
I believe it's Tollywood. Like I said to you earlier, I think it is Tollywood, but I don't want to say definitively because I'm by no means an expert on Indian cinema.
But, we are going to talk about it next week, but...
Absolutely.
I just want to say this right now. Come on. This movie. Like, drop everything. Like, if this is playing in your area... And you can watch RRR. Go see it. It's playing like in a bunch of theaters around the U.S., right? Like, I don't know how many, but it was playing in a bunch of theaters around the Bay Area. So yeah, Bay Area folks, this movie, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was playing. I think it's not in as many theaters as it was before, but it was previously playing at my two local AMC theaters.
Yeah,
and I know it got a wide release. Yeah, so I mean. There's a decent chance, I think better than some people might anticipate, of you being able to see this film. I would look it up at least.
This is like, we're going to do a whole thing about it. But this is like, if you want to see an action movie and you're sort of like, you know what, I like the Marvel movies fine, or maybe you hate the Marvel movies. Maybe you're just sick of action cinema in general. You're like, man, when are we going to get another like Mad Max Fury Road? This movie's not Mad Max Fury Road. It's its own thing. But it is like one of those action movies that makes you go like, oh yeah, this is why I love action movies. It's one of those, like, we get them every once in a while. You don't want to miss your chance to see it in a theater. And yeah, I mean, the hype is real. I think everybody I saw in my Letterbox was like 4.5 stars, 5 stars, like across the board. I think for you too, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the main reason why I wanted to see it, because it was on my radar for the lead up to the release, and then I was just kind of confused, like, what is RRR?
Yeah, I saw a few tweets of people being like, wow, you know, this is gonna be in theaters the same week as Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like, that's odd. Like, what a feast, you know, these like two terrific movies. And I think that's like the first time I heard about it, and then I kept hearing about it, like, from mutuals. Yeah,
I mean, it's a genuine word of mouth type film, at least in the United States. I think it's very big film in India. Like, I think it's the highest grossing international Indian film, at least as far as the US is concerned at this point, or at least it's up there right now. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I look forward to having that discussion with you next week. You didn't want to see Fantastic Beasts 3, which is totally fine. And I think that's going to be a better discussion anyway. So
yeah, we're not doing Secrets of Dumbledore. Yeah. I don't think I'll see it. And
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They played the trailer for it for RRR, and I was a little bit like, yeah, okay.
Sure.
I was like, la, la, la. I kept my eyes and ears down during the trailer, as I usually do. I don't like to get into the trailers, but, you know.
I mean, you're not, it's not like when you watch the trailer, you give J.K. Rowling money. It's not like she gets $5 because you watched the trailer.
Well, to be clear, I'm not trying to do any performative, like, political grandstanding. I'm just not interested. Like, I just did not like the first two Fantastic Beasts movies at all. I know people like the first one, but I was just like, I don't like it. I don't think they're good movies. I don't care about a third one. I don't want to sit through it. Sure. I also don't like J.K. Rowling, but I mean, that's a whole other thing too.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like, it's same with Morbius a few weeks ago or a couple weeks ago, I guess now.
It's like, why bother?
It's just, well, if there is something else we can talk about that I feel will inspire a more genuine conversation or something that is more exciting, that feels like something we should be talking about and we can use that in its place, I would do that. So in that case, like, we had the chance to talk about Everything Everywhere All at Once. I felt that was a much better film to discuss. And then likewise, I feel like if we have this opportunity to discuss RRR, Triple R, however you pronounce it, in lieu of discussing Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore, I'd say, let's just talk about Triple R, because why not?
Yeah. So that's our reasoning. Agree with it, disagree with it. That's all fine. That's all good. I'm not doubting, you know, there's going to be all kinds of other, you know, review shows and people talking about it. You'll be covered. Don't worry about it.
I mean, that's where I see it as, is like, how many podcasts are going to be discussing Fantastic Beasts 3? How many podcasts are going to be discussing Morbius? Rather than, you know, we have an advantage because we'll be talking about two films that, you know, generally speaking, I feel like people aren't going to be discussing on podcast forums as much.
Yeah, I've seen people talking about RRR on social media, but I haven't seen a lot of reviews. I haven't seen a lot of videos or podcasts talking about this movie. So I'm excited that we're going to be joining what's right now, at least, kind of a limited fray for that. Because I definitely want people to see that. I care more about that movie being successful. Yeah, I'm biased.
I think it's good to discuss it now because I feel like people should see it now while they can. I think it'll still play in theaters for a little bit, but in case it is becoming a more limited engagement, see that film and then hear our discussion about it.
Absolutely. Okay. So that's I think, enough background for us to talk about what we're going to talk about. We talked about Hair. We talked about movies that are not the movies we're really going to be talking about today. I think that's as good as time as any to talk about Ambulance. I don't know how to say it so that the LA is like pronounced in ambulance because
Ambulance.
Wait, say it again.
I say Ambulance.
Ambulance, but then there's like two A's. I get it. It's not perfect, but you're doing your best.
Ambulance.
There we go. Yeah. Ambulance. It even gets you kind of like pumped, right? Like you want to keep doing the and start dancing. I like it. Ambulance, the latest film from auteur director Michael Bay.
Yep.
And this is an action crime thriller movie, big old action crime thriller movie, very long. It's over 2 hours. It's not one of his longer movies. I mean, this guy's made Transformers movies that are almost 3 hours, right? Mm-hmm. So he's definitely no stranger to long running time, Michael Bay. And the film has an interesting cast. We have Jake Gyllenhaal, who hosted Saturday Night Live this past weekend to promote the film. Didn't you see some of SNL this past week?
Well, you sent me that one cringe.
Yeah, it was terrible. Skit.
The opening skit, which he was not in.
He was not in that. His monologue was okay. And there was one sketch from SNL this week that I thought was okay. It was the Instagram one. Why did you like that? That was kind of
fun. I did see the one they didn't air, which is the Cal Mooney skit, as they always don't air his stuff, which was Serious Night Live, which I think was a better idea than it was an execution, but I'm sure that skit was funnier than anything that actually made it to air. So.
I didn't see the Kyle Mooney skit, no. I had to sit through the Flower skit, which was pretty bad. I had to sit through, there was one where they were doing the cabaret, the singers for. My thing with SNL is that I think almost everybody on that cast could be doing better, particularly Cecily Strong. But, you know, that's just me. Or I guess that's not just me. I'm sure other people agree. But anyway, so Jake Gyllenhaal, he's in this film. Oh, and he even was saying in his monologue that he hadn't hosted SNL for like 15 years. The last time was in 2007 to promote Brokeback Mountain. So return. My main criticism with his monologue, Will, is that he didn't do a joke about the whole Taylor Swift thing. coward. He should have gone there. They should have done something for the All Too Well. I don't know how clued in you are to that. I know you're the pop culture.
Oh yeah, I'm familiar with it. I mean,
sure. I was a little bummed. I was like, oh, come on, man, lean into the skid. You know people are thinking about it, but okay. Yahya Abdul-Mateen II is also in this. We saw him recently in stuff like Candyman and you know, Aquaman, stuff like that.
Matrix Resurrections.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that one. But I didn't forget the movie. I forgot he was in it. He was Morpheus. And then we had Isa Gonzalez, who we've seen in a bunch of things. I mean, I feel like the first thing, like we saw her, I think, and I Care Too Much was one of the most recent. And then Baby Driver, she had a fun role in that. She's been in a few other things I'm just blanking on, but this movie is basically about a bunch of bank robbers on a heist gone wrong, and they hijack an ambulance, and they have hostages with them. One of them is the paramedic, Isaac Gonzalez. They're two adoptive brothers, the Gyllenhaal and Abdul-Mateen II, essentially trying to outwit and outdrive the police and escape with their lives and the cash. Okay, Michael Bay. We've talked about a few Michael Bay films, I think, on the show. I don't think we talked about Transformers 4 or 5, I think it was. Because I think you weren't there for that episode. It was me and
Well, that was Transformers 5, I think you mean. The one with Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
I forget why I wasn't on that one. But I remember being relieved because I didn't really want to see that movie.
Sure.
And for some reason, I wasn't able to take part in it. So it worked out. But I did see and discuss with you Six Underground, the Netflix one that he released a few years ago.
Well, I was trying to remember, like, did we have a long conversation about it? I know we also talked about 13 Hours.
Did we?
Oh, no, we didn't talk about that. I talked about that on Now Conspiring.
Not I was going to say.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I was going to say, I don't remember talking about that one with you because I think that was before our time.
That was, that was 2016, BW, before Will.
Sure.
No, Six Underground. I'm actually going to look it up on the site to see when we talked about Six Underground, but
Six Underground. Yeah, I was gonna say, I know you were very strongly negative on the film, and I was more mixed on that one. I think there's some cool action beats. I think there are scenes in that movie that are undeniable Bayhem.
Yeah,
I just could not really care a whole heck of a lot about Ryan Reynolds and his team and all that. Like, I guess the emotional pathos of it didn't really connect with me all that much, but for an actual visceral level, I feel like that might be Michael Bay as most gonzo at this point, maybe even more so than Bad Boys 2.
Which is, you know, I'll take the Bad Boys movies well over his more recent stuff.
I mean, I'll take the second one. The first one I don't think is very good.
Oh, really? I like both of them kind of equally, but it has been a long
time. I think
the
first one is kind of boring. The second one, I think, is the best film that he's probably ever made.
Oh, I think I misheard you. I thought you were saying that you prefer the first one to the second one, but okay.
No. The second one.
Yeah, okay. That makes more sense.
Yeah, the second one's a weird film because, like, I remember someone described it as, like, it's maybe a pure evil film. It should win 10 Oscars. And I'm like, I kind of agree with that sentiment.
Yeah, that's pretty
fair. Like, it is, like, maybe morally not a great film, but on a pure visceral action level, I feel like it is an undeniable spectacle and feat.
All right, so we talked about Six Underground on episode 147 of the Cinemaholics podcast. This is fun. That episode, we talked about Jumanji, The Next Level, Black Christmas, Richard Jewell, and then the last movie was Six Underground. And we had, man, we did so much back then. We also started, I went through Hala, Atlantics, I Lost My Body, The Peanut Butter Falcon, and Transit. How many movies did I watch in one week? And then we did, I think you talked about 1917 and In Fabric.
Oh, okay.
And that was before the main review. So yeah, and guess how long that episode was? An hour 25.
I was going to say, I feel like the weird thing is that our episodes have gotten longer, but we're discussing less films. I don't know if that's better or worse.
Sorry, an hour 39 minutes. I misspoke.
Yeah, so I feel like you got more bang for your buck, maybe, as far as like actual film reviews on those episodes. But I like to think that we have more in-depth conversations now.
I think that's the case. Yeah. I prefer the way we do it now, honestly, which is why we do it the way we do it now. But anyway, Ambulance. I kind of went into this movie not with high expectations, obviously, but I kind of was like, hey, you know what? This might be slightly better than some of the previous Bay stuff we've gotten. You know, it's not Transformers movies. It's not going to be that, like, I didn't think 13 Hours was horrendous or anything, but I just thought it was kind of like whatever. I don't remember it super well, honestly. For me, like, and I want to get your read on this. For me, yeah, Bad Boys and, you know, Pain and Gain, The Rock. These are the Bay movies I can tolerate. I don't like them that much. The first Transformers, even, like, I just think that they're competent movies. They're you know, they have their things that I think kind of annoy me on a visceral level, but certainly they're extremely watchable, entertaining. I get why they're successful. But where you stand on the Bayhem?
He's a director that I've never fully been on board with, but as time has progressed, I think I've kind of grown to respect him more. Certainly, I feel like he has honed a style that, even when it's not really my thing, is undeniably his, in a way that at a time right now where movies are becoming a little bit more anonymous, they feel more producer-driven as opposed to director-driven. There is something really admirable about how Bay is just continuing to do his thing. Admittedly, I guess at a smaller scale than before with the Transformers films, but in a way that I think feels more attuned to his sensibilities. It's more confident. It's more willing to do some really outlandish stuff. And it's never always my thing, like I said, but I think I disrespect his hustle at this point. I do think the last decade or so, with the exception of the more recent Transformers movies, I think he is getting better. Certainly, I think Pain and Gain is a better film than most of his previous stuff. And likewise, I think Six Underground is a more entertaining film than some of the previous Michael Bay films. And with Ambulance, I guess I came up with more expectations because it did feel like, okay, this is not an IP-driven film. It's not a movie that is trying to sell a franchise. This is like a return to form in a way, or like kind of a return to a sort of 90s thriller, action thriller sensibility, where it's just two movie stars, or I guess one soon-to-be movie star, one proven movie star, in a ambulance that's going really fast, away from the cops. A lot of gritty action stuff is happening in the process, and it's like very contained. Something that I can understand why they made during the pandemic, because it's one central but moving location reserved to primarily three actors in that one place. And it's like, okay, I can understand why they did it this way. I was more excited for this film than I was for most Michael Bay films. And I think this is only the second one of his I've seen in theaters. The only one I saw prior to this one in theaters was
really
13 Hours. Yeah, most of them I watched on DVD. I've seen almost all of his films, though.
I think I've seen almost every single one in theaters, except for the first Bad Boys I did not see in theaters. I also didn't see The Rock. I was too young. Armageddon, right. I saw in theaters, Pearl Harbor, okay. Bad Boys 2, The Island, all the Transformers, except for Age of Extinction, because that one, I don't think I ever saw that one. Or if I did, it was like right before, I think we saw the last night. Sure. I saw 13 Hours, I've seen all of them in theaters, except for like a few of his early ones, and his Netflix movie, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, 13 Hours, I just remember, that was the only one I saw in theaters because I saw it at a press screening. This is the first one I've paid to see a Michael Bay film. Oh, wow. I think it was just because there was that sentiment.
This was my first screening, actually, for a press screening for Bay. Usually I have to pay.
Sure. And I think it was just because, like, and maybe some of our listeners are too young at this point to remember this, but there was a sentiment, certainly in like around like 2009 when the second Transformers movie came out, where it's like Michael Bay represents like the death of cinema. Like, he is, you know, weaponizing cinema in a way that feels like it is antagonistic to its audience, antagonistic to the form. Just like, basically, it feels like his movies were put in the blenders, and just, you know, like, it feels like you're just kind of in a whirlwind of chaos. And I think that's become more endearing now, but I think I heard all that and I was like, well, I don't really want to support an artist like that. And I guess I just never really did. But now I'm kind of like, well, now I'm more sympathetic to that, I guess, because it's like, it may not always be my thing, but I want to support an artist who is actually true to his style and doing something that is true to him, rather than something that feels like he is appealing to a studio or to an IP brand. Certainly he has done that with the Transformers films, but he is moving away from that now. So I'm more sympathetic to what his style is, I guess, at this point.
I'm in a weird place because like I don't respect the guy. I think that his style and everything is just oppressive. But the thing I respect is that he makes a product that a lot of people really enjoy. And he makes it for them and they get the product and they like it. And I'm on the sideline and I'm just like, that's cool. You're enjoying it and no skin off my back. But I think that like, I'm not that far where I think like he's the death of cinema. It's like, no, it's not that dramatic. I just think that his philosophy of film is so antithesis to mine, where it really just, his way into like the heart of any single movie, the way that he handles characters and emotional, you know, pathos and, you know, the like things that he wants to say, if he wants to say anything at all, I have absolutely no connection. I feel like I'm watching a movie made by a robot and I'm just not into that. Like, I just don't appreciate that or respect that or have a way to sort of like connect with that. But I get the people are like, well, you know what? I want a spectacle. I want to go into the theater and just be attacked by explosions and sound and all this stuff. And you know what? Like, I don't think that's wrong. I don't think that's like, that makes you less of a cinephile or a fan of film at all. You know, it's like, if that's what you want, by golly, you're paying your ticket, get your ticket price. That's what you want. Go get it. But I'm seeing the reviews come out for Ambulance. Cause like I saw this and I was like, no. Like I watched this movie and it was like an hour too long. It was, I think, a stagnant, like hopelessly amoral to immoral, just film about nothing. And so much of it was like interesting on a like superficial way, I guess. Like there are certain moments in this film where like, that's like a really cool idea to put in a movie. I wish it was in a movie where I cared about what was going on. Specifically like this whole sequence involving like doing a surgery in the back of an ambulance, like when, you know, during a car chase, like that's a really, really cool idea for like an action set piece. The way this movie does it though, is just like dizzying. Like it's the same Bay thing that I think he struggled with for so long is that like his coherence as an action filmmaker is zero. Like it's so the one of the opening things in this movie is the actual heist, and it cuts so undeliberately. Like people just shoot and you don't see what they're shooting at. You don't have an idea of the layout or like where people are going, and people are just dumb in this movie. And I'm sitting there being like, if the filmmaker doesn't care about like the real motivations of the characters, besides, I guess, the central two, right? If he doesn't care about like making this heist have any sort of logic coherence or show us any of the actual exciting moments of like getting into the bank, doing all these things, why am I supposed to care? I just think that a lot of it is violence for the sake of it. And I can't get into that. But I'm seeing critics go to this movie and just be like, well, I like it ironically. You know, like I enjoy the mayhem. I got into it and I liked it. I don't get it. I guess it's like, you know, I like Dane Cook, you know, unironically, like even though his style to comedy is oppressive. I don't know. I don't mean to bring Dane Cook into this. He didn't.
Sure.
But that's what it reminds me of a little bit.
Yeah, I guess I gotta generally disagree with you in the case of this film. In that I feel like this is actually an evolution point for Michael Bay. It feels like he's a little bit more honed in. It feels a little bit more mature. I do think his politics are always a little bit uncertain.
Like I can get past that. I don't need his politics to match up with mine. Like I don't care. Of course his politics don't match up with mine. I can still enjoy his movie, but
sure.
It's just the way that he gets his politics across is so lazy, and it, yeah, that's all.
Well, that's what it feels like. It's a little bit more complex, I think, because like there's a very clear thing where it's like the healthcare system in America is terrible and it's oppressive, and you know, people must resort to drastic and dangerous measures in order to protect their loved ones. And it's like, okay, you know, not the most you know, complex way of looking at the healthcare system, but I'm not asking for that from Michael Bay. It's actually something I find more appealing for him because it gives it some more grounded, rooted stakes. And I think the fact that it is fairly contained to three characters allows him to not lose the plot in a way that his other previous films, with the exception maybe Pain and Gain,
well, I think that's where the movie falters, though, is because you have just three characters and you have a lot of time to investigate what you're talking about, like the healthcare system, being a veteran, in terms of Isaac Gonzalez's character, how she just, you know, becomes so numb to what she's done, and, you know, she stuff gets brought up about her past and like why she's not a doctor, all this stuff, and I'm like, we have all of this stuff to explore, but we don't for over 2 hours. It's just sort of the same beats over and over again. That's why I call it oppressive. It's so repetitive and redundant that I was just like I wanted the film to end.
Sure. I mean, I think maybe the Tony Scott version of this film, which I think Tony Scott was always probably the biggest influence on Michael Bay's work, certainly his earlier stuff when he was with Bruckheimer and working under that studio, or that producer, I mean. And I imagine his version, or if you want to go a little bit loftier, maybe the like Michael Mann version of this, or the like who's the guy that did Speed, the guy did Twister too.
Twister. What's his name? There was a sequel to Twister?
No. Like the director of.
I thought you were saying like who directed the second. John. You're talking about DeBont. John DeBont.
I imagine
the Dutch. He was like a cinematographer, yeah. Right?
But anyway, like any of those filmmakers, I'm sure would have been more adept at matching the action to the emotional.
Yeah, because this is Speed, but like Speed has so much better progression as a movie. Like it feels like every set piece builds upon the other. This movie, like sure. You could rearrange all kinds of things.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that. And that's why I think like Speed is a great film. That's why I think any number of like I think this is probably the closest that Michael Bay has come to making his Unstoppable, I guess, at this point. Like, I mean, you know, I think Unstoppable is a better film than this. But I think on its own terms, what Michael Bay is accomplishing here is still a major step up. I think it's him being more honed in. I think part of that is because of the limitations of both the budget and filming during the pandemic. But I think actually those limitations proved to be more beneficial to him because it allows him not to get so out of sync in a way that I feel like the last few Transformers movies got out of hand and all that. I think he's able to be reined in enough that you get that Michael Bayhem chaos, that Bayhem, if you will, but not to the point where it feels, I guess, in the way that you feel where it's like oppressive. I didn't feel that to that extent because I feel like the characters were reined in enough. The focus was reined in enough that you're able to get engaged with the characters and the story enough to keep it going and keep moving. But I agree that like it is a long film and it's such a simple premise.
It's working. Like, the first hour, the movie's working to what you're saying, because it's reined in and once it does sort of like center around those characters, it does take a long time to get to the main point of the film. It has such a long prologue essentially, but yeah, I'm just saying, it's like once you get to like the hour and a half mark, it's like, why are we still doing this? Like we're still in the ambulance. The characters are doing there another moment where the brothers are fighting, another moment where they're trying to outmatch the police. An FBI character gets like dropped in like way too late in the film for us to care. And then that never really goes anywhere. I don't know. It just, to me, I didn't think that the film was reined in a lot of this extra stuff that I think was in the script. The script was by Chris Fedek, by the way.
Sure. But I don't know. I mean, certainly by the third act, I can feel the exhaust coming in. But I guess I'm just not as like overburdened by this as you feel you are, I guess. I mean, it just doesn't hit me quite as hard as it did for you. I'm still with the film for most of it because it's able to retain that kinetic energy. It's able to keep moving forward. And I feel like there are less moments where in previous Michael Bay movies, like he has like these little like sketches where like there's like awkward comedy beats and all that stuff. Like there are a couple of those in here, but most of them at least still progress the plot or keep the characters in focus. Like it doesn't feel like there's anything like Ken Jeong's stuff in the like whatever Transformers. I think that's the third Transformers movie where it just feels super out of place and it feels like it's adding to the film in an unnecessary way. I felt like I said, I think he was able to restrain himself enough to keep it contained to the plot and keep it focused. Now, would I have liked more character depth? Would I have liked more to know about these characters? Yes, but at the same time, I don't think it comes at the disservice of the film that we don't know more about them. I think we know enough to keep going.
I think they were I was worried that they were going to do that when they had like they were introducing all the other bank robbers. And I was like, okay, are these bank robbers going to go do different things in different parts of the city? And we're just going to be like having all these like intercutting stories. Yeah, that would have made this even worse. Probably would have made it longer. But no, the movie doesn't go there at least. But I don't know. I just think it's very unceremonious in terms of what it does with some of these side characters. I did think Garrett Dillahunt, like, you know, they do have that whole thing where he's sort of like the police captain sort of character. He's the one who's like trying to stop the bank heist like before it started or like before it went like terribly. That made no sense to me at all, though, like what their plan was necessarily, because clearly that didn't work. But anyway, I thought, you know, Dillahunt at least had like an interesting turn in this movie, is like how he was handling things. And I was appreciative that we didn't have all of these tangents, I guess. Like it was always focused in on, well, they're in the ambulance. The only problem with that is like there was no breathing room. There were, you know, that's the thing. I was like, this, if you're only going to be on the ambulance and it's going to be that focused, make it a 90-minute movie. Like the 90-minute version of this would have been, I think, fine. Like kind of an average movie, sure, by my estimation, at least. I think the thing that people are really liking about this that I'm seeing is like people are like, well, there are drones in this.
There are drone shots. Is incredible. I mean, I don't know how you can argue against that.
They took me out of the movie. They took me out because I don't think the drone shots and the tilting and the pivoting, I don't think I thought the color balance was way off. The sound kind of just doesn't, like, you, if you keep the same sound quality for the main cameras that they were using and then you switch to the drone, it's the same thing. I think, I don't remember 13 Hours having like drone footage, but I remember it having like extra like footage to sort of like mimic the military environment. It kind of made sense in the story, though, and here it doesn't make sense. So I found it kind of jarring. I was just like, wait, what? Like, why are you doing that? And like the zoom and zips, it was like, I just think it's like a different cinematic language you're just like shoehorning into this. And I get it, I'm the minority on this. People are like, well, no, it's sure, cool. Like, but I didn't think it was cool enough.
I mean, certainly Bay is no stranger to mixing styles often within the same scene. Like there are countless examples in Transformers movies where it goes from IMAX cameras to like normal 35 or whatever. And it's just like, even at home when you watch it goes like in and out enough to like it can cause a headache. I felt like this was way more consistent about that. Like I felt like seeing it in IMAX, I was afraid that was what was going to happen, but I was actually really impressed by how it was able to seamlessly kind of go into both the drone footage and the regular, you know, whatever Kodak camera, whatever they use to film this outside of that. And I thought the drone stuff was actually more effective about getting you into it because it's so visceral and it's so unique that like when you see it like scaling a building and like going that and like it feels like you're on a roller coaster. It's just
there were a couple of shots where I thought it worked, but most of them no, because I was like, that's a drone. And I don't know, like I wasn't immersed. Like I was just like, well, that's just, I was just in the head of the movie, in the head of Michael Bay, I should say. Like that's just Bay playing with a drone, kind of going around here. I think the thing is, people are like, well, yeah, John, it's Michael Bay. Like that, the immersion is that you're in a Michael Bay film. You're thinking too much. And I get it. It's on me. I just don't think that like it's a style that like connects with me. And so like for other people, I think would look at those shots and just be like, man, that's really impressive.
Sure.
For me, it's just like, man, that's really disorganized.
What's just interesting to me, because I normally don't really connect with Michael Bay. Like he's not a filmmaker I traditionally get with, but I feel like this is a step up. Like I feel like I'm able to get with him, not to a point where I think some folks are, where they're giving this like 5 out of 5 stars and being like, this is a maximalist masterpiece or whatever. I'm not on that level, but I am more receptive to this film because it feels like this is what I've wanted from Michael Bay for a while, a way that he was able to channel that chaotic energy, but reined in and focus enough to the story and the characters that it doesn't feel like such an oppressive viewing experience. Or if it is oppressive, it feels intentional to the story. It makes you get into like this kind of militarized state where they're like, you know, literally at gunpoint at every single moment. And you have to kind of like use your like blockhead of wits to figure out what to do next. And I can agree that like, would it be more effective if it did that in 90 minutes? I mean, I guess, but you know, this is Michael Bay and he's going to make a 2-hour film. And so I would rather support what the filmmaker is going to do than get the condensed version, I guess, in the long run.
I think I know what the issue is for me. I should have been drinking during this movie. That probably would have helped.
I mean, I was dead sober and I had a good time.
I was too. So, yeah. And so, yeah, but I am curious, like, and I think a lot of people have pointed this out. This is a very much like a Grand Theft Auto movie that isn't called Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, to the point where they even point that out, because I was going to make that comment. And then
he refers to like his old movies a lot in this movie. I was kind of surprised by it.
Twice. I mean, not a lot, but more than twice most filmmakers do. I mean, more than most filmmakers do. Like, you know, Scorsese's not really like, these are mean streets, you know, adoring Goodfellas, you know.
That guy over there, he's some sort of raging bull. Quick, call the taxi driver. No, but yeah, he refers to like The Rock and what was the other movie he referred to? It wasn't Transformers.
He said, well, the cops come out of the car. It's like, let's go out like Bad Boys.
That's right, Bad Boys. Yeah. Oh man, that was funny. But no, I do think that, what was I going to say? A GTA. Grand Theft Auto. Like I could see, like, if somebody was going to make a Grand Theft Auto movie, like officially.
Oh, it should be Bay. Absolutely.
I mean, who else? You know, like, I wouldn't want it, but like, I don't know any other director who'd be able to like handle the ambition of such a thing. But I guess this already is like a Grand Theft Auto movie, so we probably don't need it. Okay. I think that's all. I think we're pretty clear in our thoughts here, right? Was there anything else you wanted to add?
The only major thing I just wanted to really highlight here was how much of this was practical.
Sure.
In a way that I felt was really worth noting. And I felt like that got me more immersed in the film because it wasn't like I was distracted. There are a couple green screen shots.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a few. I mean, it's not bad.
But I never felt like I was like taken out of the film by anything. And I felt like that was what made it so immersive, was that it's also practical and so contained to the actual action beats. I felt like, you know, for as much as Michael Bay's style can be explosive, I felt like one of the most surprising things here was that how much he only had like maybe like two or three explosions, and they're actually effective, because it's like, oh, like it's building up to this explosion in a way that like his previous movies just like explosion, explosion, explosion every 15 minutes.
Yeah, like, but my only thing with that is that, like, I mean, the main thrust of the plot is like, we have to keep this cop alive because otherwise you're going to jail for a long time. It's like,
right. But then like, and then 10 cops die.
Yeah. Like they're exploding all over the place.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, you're, if you get caught, even if you don't kill this cop, you're still going to like right. It makes no sense whatsoever. I agree. The practical stuff in here, as usual with Bay, is it's one of the strongest selling points. I mean, that one shot where there's like two helicopters in the LA River. I mean, that was incredible that he got that shot. Yeah. Like, unbelievable.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and that's what I feel like is my main thing with it, is that like, I think it's more a movie of moments than an overall great experience. But I feel like this is probably the most consistent and the most entertaining Michael Bay has been in a decent while.
I think the reason I like the practical effects and everything. I just, the editing. For me, I just cannot with the editing, and it's like I could handle this whole style and his pacing and the way he just approaches the movie for a while, but I have a threshold, and it's like, yeah, man, once we get past the 90-minute mark with this movie, I'm done. I'm just like, okay, get me out of this ambulance. I need another ambulance. Okay,
yeah. I guess we'll just have to disagree.
Yeah, that's fine. It'd be weird if we agreed on a Michael Bay movie. He's too divisive. These days, at least. I thought everybody kind of was like on the same page with Bay, but I'm kind of surprised, and not in a bad way, where I'm seeing people be like, I love Michael Bay, like, you know, like really serious critics who you'd think would be like kind of snobby about Michael Bay are kind of being like, this guy rocks. I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'm not a full out Bay apologist. I really only enjoy like a couple of his films at this point, maybe a few.
There are some people who are like hardcore into his stuff. And I was surprised to see that.
But I mean, if he keeps this up, I mean, you know, I'd be more than happy to support a filmmaker if he's keeping this level, I'd say. And also, like, this had a really small crew, it looked like.
And he's not doing some of the most egregious stuff of his career that I think was more reprehensible. Like, it's just some of the stuff he was doing, like the objectification of his like female stars and stuff.
I was worried about that with Isaac Gonzalez's character, but no, it's actually not there. Yeah, I thought it was actually really like she just. I think all the performances here are good.
He's and growing
like,
up, man. Yeah, Michael Bay. He may be in his late 50s, but you know, I think he just entered. He's like in his 30s, I think, maturity wise. And so we're seeing some progression.
Sure.
No hate to Michael Bay as a person. I think I've heard, as far as I understand, like he's. I think there have been like some rumors of like some issues he's had with like women in general, but like by and large, I think people are like, he's a pretty nice guy, seems like a pretty good dude,
right? Yeah, I mean, the only person I've heard speak out against him was Megan Fox, which shouldn't
be
discounted.
Megan Fox and Kate Beckinsale too.
I didn't hear that
for
one, but
Pearl Harbor.
Okay, yeah,
but well, that's when he was a teenager, right? Maturity wise,
sure. So I mean, I'm not gonna like discount those experiences or their perspectives. But I will say, I think generally, yeah, he seems like he's a pretty collaborative and, you know, open filmmaker. You know, like, I think he like encourages people to offer stuff, but he stays true to his style and stuff. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I remember hearing that, like, I guess like Jake Gyllenhaal, there were a couple scenes where he just like directed it, basically. Like, they'd just be like, okay, you should just do this. And I guess Michael Bay was just like, all right, yeah, as long as we get the footage.
Yeah, you know what? We didn't talk about the performances much at all, which I think they're all serviceable. I think Gyllenhaal is the only one that I was like, ooh, that's a good performance. But at least it's a good performance because he's doing the Nick Cage thing, but he's kind of doing it his way. And I thought Gyllenhaal was like the only character that I thought was like the right energy level. I think I'm not criticizing Yahya Abdul-Mateen II or Isaac Gonzalez. I just think that they're more like straight characters, kind of like in his like wake. And I think that dynamic pretty much works. So I don't have any complaints there.
I mean, I think they're both very exciting actors as far as like they have that movie star charisma that suggests that like they could go on to be bigger stars if they get better roles, I guess.
You mean Isaac Gonzalez and Yahya Abdul-Mateen II?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, Jake Gyllenhaal is like proven.
I was gonna say, it's like, yeah, well, Jake Gyllenhaal's already an A-lister,
right? But. Yeah, no, I'm talking about Yahya Abdul-Mateen II and Isaac Gonzalez. Yeah, I think they're, I mean, they both have very charismatic presences in this film. I think they carry themselves, especially given how erratic most of this film is. I'm sure how erratic it was to film it. You know, I'm excited for both of them as far as what they're going to do next. But yeah, I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal is a proven star at this point, and I think he's, you know, I don't think there's a lot of meat to this character, but I think he really relishes the part, and he seems to have a lot of fun doing it. And yeah, a lot of fun watching all three of them in this film.
Yeah, you know, I have my complaints about Gyllenhaal, but that's separate. I think with Gyllenhaal, I mean, as an actor, I would say, you know, in terms of,
did he slight you?
Yeah, you know, he owes me like $5 and he keeps acting like he doesn't. No, but Gyllenhaal was doing, he was doing his cold open for, or not his cold open, his monologue for SNL.
Sure.
And he was sort of talking about, you know, how acting should be fun. It's like people take it too seriously. People don't, he was like, something I've kind of learned the last few years is like, you should be having fun with this. Like, acting is kind of silly and stupid when, if you really think about it, but it's awesome. And I was like, yeah, you know what? That's a pretty good philosophy of this, you know, of this current acting stage of his career, you know? So I'm here for it. All right. The movie's doing pretty well at the box office. It made $31 million, I think, worldwide.
Okay.
Either worldwide or domestic.
I thought it was tanking.
Well, I mean, its budget isn't that high. That's the thing.
Okay. That's a good point. Yeah.
It's not 45, an IP film. Yeah. Its budget reportedly is like $40 million.
Yeah.
Because I think it saved a lot of money on like post-production CGI, right?
Yeah. I mean, seems like it.
I think so. Yeah, I'm seeing it right now. It's grossed. I think that's why people are saying it's tanking, because it only grossed $8.7 million in the United States and Canada, which is not, that's not good. It should have grossed at least 20. That's like less than half of what it probably.
Well, that's
should've.
What I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's making up for it globally, pushing it up to $31 million, which that's good. I mean, if it can get to $100 million worldwide, it'll be fine. But yeah, not a huge success yet. And I don't think it's how much competition does it have? I mean, we have Fantastic Beasts. I don't know how well that's going to do though. And well, after that, we have, what else do we have in,
The Northman.
April, The Northman. I don't think The Northman's going to be a big, like, you know, stealing, siphoning stuff from something like Ambulance. I don't think we're getting like a big summer thing until Doctor Strange, early in May, and then Top Gun at the end of May. So
sure.
I think this movie might do okay. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I just think they put in IMAX screens.
Mm-hmm.
They, I think, had higher hopes for it, given Michael Bay's involvement and all that.
Sure.
I think a lot of these theaters like AMC are probably kicking themselves. They didn't reserve those IMAXs for Sonic the Hedgehog 2, which is creaming Ambulance at this point. But I'm definitely glad I got to see Ambulance at an IMAX screen.
Well, we're going to talk about Sonic for sure. I'm kind of interested. I haven't seen the box office for that yet, but let's finish out our review of Ambulance with the Rotten Tomatoes game. Will Ash, let's look at Ambulance here. We have 169 reviews counted from critics on Rotten Tomatoes. Can you guess the Rotten Tomatoes score? What do you think?
I think it's going to be positive, but not certified fresh. So I'm going to say 68%.
Ooh, very good. It's not, you're only one off.
Okay.
So do you think it's 67 or 69? Nice.
Oh, I gotta say 69, baby.
that's where you falter at 67. I'm sure your brain was just like 67, but I'm glad you went with your heart on that one.
Sure.
67% on Rotten Tomatoes. You were almost spot on. Not certified fresh, but that's still a fresh rating. What are you gonna do? And then audience score. Oh gosh, now that I think about it, Will, I gave the film a negative review on Rotten Tomatoes. It would have been 60, maybe it would have been 69 if it wasn't for me.
Yeah, hoisted by your own batard.
the game is rigged. Oh yeah, audience score. Yeah. We have 500 plus verified ratings. A lot of verified ratings for this one.
I think people are going to be positive, but not like through the roof with it. So I'm going to say 74%.
They are more through the roof than I think you're suspecting. 88%.
Wow.
Very high. Good. Very high. Nice. Rotten Tomatoes, though, I'm a little curious. They bill this as a mystery and thriller drama. What are you doing, Rotten Tomatoes? What mystery is there in Ambulance?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And then let's go to Letterboxd. Let's see if you can guess the average rating. We have 19,000 watches so far logged on Letterboxd. That's not a ton, but you know, that's good. But okay, what do you think the average rating is out of 5?
3.6?
A little bit lower, 3.2. Yeah, people aren't that into it, but you know, it's certainly above the 3, which is, I think with Letterboxd. I think with Letterboxd, that's pretty solid.
Yeah, and, I mean, lower than I expected, though, given how receptive my feed has been, at least.
Last and probably least, CinemaScore. What do you think in Vegas had to say?
I'm going to say a flat B.
No, A minus.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Folks in Vegas hate LA just as much as Michael Bay.
They're cheering in their theaters there, I guess.
Yeah. Blow up that city. That's worth gambling. Okay. That is our review of Ambulance. It is now playing in theaters. We have one more review for you all this week. Little movie, little sequel called Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Now, as you'll recall, the first Sonic the Hedgehog movie came out right before the big pandemic, right? So we talked about Sonic the Hedgehog on episode 155 of the show. Mm-hmm. So that was February 17th, 2020, literally a month before like the major lockdowns were like in full swing, right?
Yeah, that was the last, I think, full house screening of a film that I saw. I remember seeing that like a Friday showing or something like that.
Might have been the case for me too. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I saw like Emma and stuff, but like that wasn't, you know, packed and like Onward was a press screening. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, like, I feel like that was the last like public screening that I remember like people were going to the movies in masses to see a film.
Also in that episode, we talked about The Photograph, Downhill, and To All the Boys, P.S. I Still Love You. What a time we were alive.
Sure. Yeah.
It all went downhill, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
But yeah, so we talked about the first Sonic. Kind of the big thing with that first movie was that they released a trailer a year before because it was supposed to come out in 2019. And the design of Sonic was really bad. Like, objectively, his eyes were cursed. And people were like, man, he doesn't look like Sonic. He looks like this weird CGI monstrosity. Right. And there was a lot of backlash, and Paramount was like, you know what? We got your back. We're going to push the movie back, and we're going to overwork and underpay our animators and production workers to fix all of this mess. And by golly, they did it. And that movie was a big success. It made a ton of money.
Yeah. I mean, I remember there were a lot of weird comments before the design came out, I think from producer Tim Miller. Where he was just like, we're going to actually make it like, what would Sonic look like in the real world and stuff? And it's like, no one's asking this question. Don't do this. Yeah. Like, everyone, like, before I was just like, this sounds really weird because he had that poster with the really beefy legs. And it's like, I don't want an atomically correct Sonic. We just want Sonic that's in the games, but in live action form.
Exactly.
And they had to learn that the hard way. But I do feel bad for the animators who probably had to bear the brunt of most of that.
I'm sure they were the ones who were probably saying before, like,
well, that's what I mean. Yeah. It's like, I'm sure they were like, this is weird. It's like, this is weird. I don't know if we should do this. And it's like, don't talk out of place. We hired you to do a job, do it. And so we can meet our quota, you know? And it's like,
Now, this is Paramount, and for the sequel, we have a lot of characters returning. Of course, Ben Schwartz is back to voice Sonic. I think he did a terrific job in that first movie voicing Sonic. Here as well, I just think I think he's a great voice actor for this character. And we also have coming back Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik, the big villain. Of course, you got to have Jim Carrey coming back. I know people are saying like they're going to do a third Sonic. How are they going to bring Jim Carrey back? It's looking like he might retire, but I feel like he's got to.
He's under contract, I have to assume. Like, even if he's,
I don't know if he's under contract though. I'm pretty sure they got. But
I would be surprised they didn't give him like a 3-pitcher deal that he had to sign. For
perhaps James Marsden and Tika Sumpter are back as well. Sonic's parents, adoptive parents, of course. You know, Shamar Moore is back, and he wasn't in the first one actually. Now that I think about it, he's just in this one. And then Natasha Rothwell, she was in the first one. Bigger role in this. That was one thing I was surprised about this movie, is that they kind of put the human characters on the back burner for a chunk of the movie. And I was like, oh, you know what? We're just not going to have James Marsden, Tika Sumpter. We're not going to have them much in this movie. And then the movie is like, psych. They get a whole act for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the script was intended to be before the pandemic, but from what I've heard, they made it so it's like they actually kind of did in reverse, where they did a lot of the animation before they filmed the live action segments. So, cause that was stuff they could do in house before they could, you know, film safely in studio or whatever, or on location. So that's why I think there was more animation stuff this time around. Cause that was the stuff they could do for like a year and some change before they actually shot the film.
Sure. Sure. And you'll notice too, I mean, the human characters spend most of the time in only two locations. So, you know, the main human characters, we should say. All that said, yeah, they shot this film last year, like last spring, and clearly they had some delays and everything. I'm actually kind of impressed that they still came out with this movie 2 years after the first one. So in that respect, quite an accomplishment for the people involved. Jeff Fowler returns as director. The last movie was his first time as a live action directorial debut. I think he had done, he was like an animator too, visual effects artist. And I think he had done like some short films, but he's back here doing he did a good job in the first one. I didn't think that first one was all that great. You know, I thought it was pretty flawed, but I thought it was a fun time with Sonic and his new pals. This movie is, I think, way more true to the games. Like we don't have to get super into the plot, but we have some new characters. We're getting more of like the video game characters and plots, where we're going to more locations. We have Tails, the iconic Tails, Miles Prower, you know, the awesome pun of a name, voiced by Colleen O'Shaughnessy, who voices the character in some of the more recent games. And so Tails shows up, he's Sonic's new buddy. We also have a new antagonist named Knuckles the Echidna, also from the games, voiced by Idris Elba, big name they got for Knuckles. And so he's this powerful, I hate Sonic, you know, kind of character. He teams up with Dr. Robotnik. They're all trying to get the Master Emerald, also from the video games, of course. They're going to different places. It's a big chase hunt, you know, hunt for the MacGuffin. Fun stuff. That's like what the games are, you know? There's one point they're even like, oh, this is going to be a race. And it's like, yeah, that's Sonic. Like, that tracks. It's not like the first one where it's just sort of like, we got to get to San Francisco, and Sonic, you can't go too fast. Like, this movie's like, nah, forget it. We got rings. We're teleporting. We're going everywhere. Sonic, go as fast as you can. So I want to give the movie some props there. I think it's a little bit more of an unleashed video game movie. I also think it's pretty decent. I mean, there were times in this movie where I was like, why do we have this subplot? Why is this happening with this wedding and this stuff? I don't want to give stuff away, but I was like, can we go back to the part where Sonic and Tails are, you know, having a dance off in Siberia? That was fun. You know, that was an energy level I appreciated. So yeah, I don't think the film is like good all the way through, but I gotta say, Will, I had a good time with it. What did you think of Sonic the Hedgehog 2? Did it satisfy your need for speed? Are you now going by Quill Ashton?
Maybe so. I went into this, I guess, with fairly modest expectations. Because I don't know, I think the first one, my expectations were fairly low, and I walked away being like, that was like a not a good film, but like okay, close to decent film. I was like, it exceeded what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a lot more cringy, a lot more unbearable. And I walked away from being walked away from that being like, this is like a little bit better than I gave it credit going into it. I rewatched the film before this one. That movie does not hold up.
I didn't even bother because I was like, there's no way I'm going to like it more. So why would I? Yeah,
I just wanted to have a more concrete opinion of the film because like I was kind of wishy-washy on it the first time being like, well, like I said, like it's better than my expectations were, but I don't know if that translates to it being a good film. So I wanted to have a more concrete opinion. My opinion is that that movie, you can really tell, like you can see the flop sweat on it a lot as far as like it is trying to emulate from Marvel's you know, playbook a lot. You can kind of just tell like where they really like shoehorned in jokes, things that would appeal to as broad an audience as possible.
That's not to say that sequel kind of does that too. I mean,
sure,
you're probably
and I'm not
get
discounting
into that, yeah.
that. Yeah, I was gonna say I'm not discounting that. I'm just saying that watching the film a second time, I was like, you right, know, way less into it. But not like I don't hate it or anything. I think there's still good stuff in it. I think the third act of that film is still pretty fun, even though it is, like I said, borrowing from Marvel's playbook, like it's basically just picking up from Thor: The Dark World, where he's like hopping in the rings through different places. Yeah. But you know, I mean, Carrie is giving a lot of fun energy in that. You know, I agree with you that Ben or what's his name?
Ben Schwartz, Parks and Recreation fame.
Yeah,
he even makes a joke. He references Parks and Recreation in this movie when he goes, "You're the worst," or like whatever.
Okay.
That was fun.
Yeah. But yeah, so I went into this being like not really dreading it, but I'm like, I'm not really like at a place in my life where I'm looking forward to Sonic the Hedgehog 2, I'll just be honest. So I guess my again fairly muted expectations play to the benefit here. Cause I think this is you know, it's decent. Like it's not great. I would not say you should see this film over a lot of other better films in theaters right now, but I think compared to what my like envisioning of the project was, I felt it was more consistently amusing than I anticipated. I think, like you said, the action is kind of bubbly and inspired. I think the animation is generally a lot better in this one because, you know, like they didn't have to rush the redesign a character. And I think, you know, like I think Sonic has way more chemistry with any of the animated characters in this than he did with James Marsden. Not that James Marsden was bad. I just felt like there was just nothing really there. It just was your kind of typical like we don't like each other, now we like each other kind of thing, you know, or at least as far as James Marsden's character was concerned in that first film. And this one, like I feel like the buddy friendship between Tails and Sonic is a lot more fun. It's a lot, like I said, a lot more true to the games, and it felt more like this is like what I kind of want from a Sonic film. Far from perfect, but as a goofy blockbuster aimed for families and kids, it's not a bad time.
Yeah. It's a fun lesson in terms of like, okay, you know, the first one was sort of about like Sonic, you know, trying to find like his new family, found family. It's like, yeah, we've seen so many movies like that. This one was a little bit more unique in the sense that he's kind of like an older sibling to Tails. You know, he's kind of like, you know, there's a point where James Marsden is like, I wish Sonic had his own squad, his own friends. You know, he's kind of looking at the Shamar Moore character has his squad, you know, his like his groomsmen. And it's like, man, I want that for Sonic. And I was like, you know, it's kind of fun. There aren't a lot of movies that are sort of about how the main character should get more friends. You know, like I Love You, Man comes to mind, I guess. But, you know, for a family centered movie, that's kind of cool.
I know one movie about making friends.
Yeah.
That came out recently. And it goes by name of R.R.R.
No, Will, you're wrong, because that's a movie about brothers.
Sure. Ambulance.
No, those are pretend brothers. Whoa, no, sorry, no, Jake Gyllenhaal just came in here and just, he's yelling at me now.
Yeah. R.I.P. John.
R.I.P.D., you mean?
Yeah, exactly, I guess. I mean, I think that was the big thing that the first movie got right, was that they acknowledged that Sonic was just basically a rambunctious 10 to 12 year old kid who just wanted to make friends and wanted to live life to the fullest. I think that was where that movie was at its most entertaining. And this one is just like, now Sonic is like a 13 to 14 year old kid who's like, you know, getting a little bit older, a little bit more aware of the world, I guess. But yeah, like you said,
he wants to
like
be
a younger
superhero. They sort of rip off like the whole like he wants to be a Marvel hero. And you know, I said in my review that this movie really is like recycling the last 10 years of like superhero movies, basically. Sure. And kind of just like merging them into its own little video game movie. It's weird.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, it is definitely taking heavily from the Marvel playbook. Like, it's just basically copying it. So,
but more pop culture jokes than the Marvel movies, right? Like, they're still joking about flossing. They're still joking about,
that's cringe. That was the only real, like, big cringe moment, though, I think. There were, like, I was expecting more, and that was, like, the one where I was like, okay, that's cringe, but, I mean, that's the worst of it.
One of the biggest lifts from Marvel, for sure, is, like, the entirety of Knuckles. He's just basically Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy. It's the same shtick, but actually less interesting than Drax, because it's really just Drax from the first movie where he's, like, he doesn't get metaphors. And it's like, we've seen so many characters like that since 2014. And it's just a little bit like, it kind of like, it works. Like, it's like, that is kind of how that character should be, I guess. If you're going to like present him the way he is, like, of course he doesn't get these things. He's a little bit of a, like, overly serious, but I was like, wow, that's so uninspired for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that is a good point though. It is basically like you were saying, it is Drax in red form as opposed to, I guess, gray. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do think as far as Jim Carrey is concerned, I think I really responded more to his thing this time than last time.
Yeah, he's a bit more fun in this.
Well, because it realized that, like, okay, as Robotnik, it gets more insane. Like, he's allowed to be more insane. Like, in the first movie, you know, it kind of felt like he was just like a grab bag of all of his like previous characters, like a little bit of Ace Ventura,
a
little bit of a Grinch.
He still had a foothold in like polite society, it felt like, because he was sure, you know, he wasn't the villain at first.
Yeah. And yeah, now it's just like he is like pure chaos, or not pure chaos, I guess, but like more chaotic than before, because he's been on that mushroom planet for how long at this point. And it's like, he's almost like an alien himself at this point. And I felt like that was more emboldening for him as an actor. Like, it felt like it could inspire more genuine chaos. Whereas like in the first movie, it kind of felt like, okay, now we just need Jim Carrey to do and say some crazy things for 5 minutes. Do what you want. Mm-hmm. We can edit around it. And this time it felt a little bit more organic to who Robotnik should be in this world, or, you know, who should be coming back to this world in a way that felt more inspired and fun to me. Like, this is, I think, the Jim Carrey I wanted from the previous film in this one.
Yeah, same here. I think it's the shaved head. I think that's all it comes down to.
It's the mustache, I think.
It's both. It's a combination, right? I think where I go down on this movie, like where I come down on this movie, I should say, I think I'm a little bit more conflicted about where the cartooniness and the live action sort of collide, because, like, why not just make an animated movie? I'm still kind of struggling to be like, why does this need to be live action? If, like, all the stuff that I personally like out of the movie are when it's not live action, when it is just sort of like, I don't know, I guess because you have Jim Carrey and all that, but I guess like the merging of like all the subplots involving the Hawaii stuff and, you know, Green Hills as a location. And I can't help but wonder, like, would this be better as like a full on cartoon if they just committed it to being animated all the way, or would that not be as fun? I guess I don't see what live action brings to this as a movie besides it's live action, so you can take it more seriously. Like, kids and adults can enjoy it. I guess that's the only thing that I can think of, you know, because I think of like Angry Birds, you know, like that's a good movie. Like, that's, it doesn't need to have, it doesn't need to be in like New York City.
Sure. I didn't see the second Angry Birds. I saw the first one, which it wasn't particularly fond of, but that's like the Smurfs problem, I remember, because like the Smurfs movies, they get a bad rap, I think, because they play in the formula, but I think the animation stuff in that movie is generally fine. It just, when it goes to New York City with Neil Patrick Harris, like, I don't care about Neil Patrick Harris in New York City. He's a lovely man, I have nothing against him, but in this movie I don't need him. Like, I just want the Smurfs. I came to see the Smurfs. Why are we spending time with Neil Patrick Harris? And it's like, with this one, it's like, you know, I'm glad James Marsden is finally getting a role that pays him well. Like, you know, God knows he's been trying to be a leading man for like 15 years. It has not really paid off for the most part. And so it's nice that he's, you know, in a successful franchise. But anytime James Marsden's in the equation in Hawaii, I'm just kind of checked out. Like, I'm just like, sorry, James Marsden. Like, I just don't really care about your character, your cop character in this, you know, having marital strife. with his sister-in-law.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it's a fantasy story. So like your subplot needs to have an element of fantasy to it. Like if you try to do, you lean too hard on like the real world stakes of like, oh man, aren't weddings awkward? I don't know. It's just like, well, I don't, do something more. Like it's Sonic. Like,
it's filler. And I think, yeah, for me, like I'm most engaged with it until those moments happen. And that's like when I check my phone, I'm like, okay, like let's get this over with so we can get back to Sonic and Tails.
Yeah. See, and that's the thing. This is not a movie that needs filler. It's over 2 hours. It's 2 hours and 2 minutes. It absolutely does not need to be. I think this movie at most should be like an hour 40, right? Like what, why is this as long as it is? Because you get to the point, like I think about like an hour and 30 minutes in, and I'm just like, is this going to keep going? Cause I don't think it's at the finish line, you know, pun intended, I guess, but I was like, they still have to do like a whole other thing, like another half hour. Like why? Like, we can wrap this up in like 15 minutes easy, but no, it kind of has to keep going and going. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause there's a point where like they unlock something and you're kind of like, oh, I guess this is technically the climax of the film. Kind of a, not as big of a climax as I anticipate, but yeah, it seems like things are winding down and it's like, wait a minute, we're going to a second location. And then we're back and it's like, oh, okay, I guess this is actually the climax. And it's not a bad climax or anything, but at that point you're kind of, you know, like, all right, like, I'm kind of ready for this to wrap up a bit. This is getting a little long.
Did you stick around for the post-credits scene?
You better believe it.
Yeah. I mean, they're setting up the third one, and I got to be honest, like, I don't find it, like, enticing very much, but I'm not a Sonic fan. I've played the games. I know these characters pretty well. I think Sonic is really fun, and I'll watch another one of these, sure, but I don't know. I think I'm getting tired of the Sonic thing, and I'm a little skeptical on how a third movie would do. I feel like I would be way sick of it by the time we get a third movie. Who knows? Though? Maybe if it doesn't come out for a few years, I'll be like, you know what? Sure, I can do another lap around the ring. Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that I think they learned the right lessons this time, and I think Fowler is better as a director at this point. He seems a little bit more confident, at least. Mm-hmm. As far as like following the money or following the things that people really responded to with the first film. And I do applaud him for that. But I agree, like if we're going to get a third movie, really just all I really care about are Sonic and Tails and Knuckles and Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik. Cause I consider all those to be anime characters, including Jim Carrey. And so like the human stuff, otherwise I don't really connect with. There is a turn with the wedding that, without giving too much away, I think is kind of funny. But not like, you know, I generally could have done without all that stuff. I feel like it like we said before, it's just mostly filler.
Yeah, it just feels like another set piece.
It's just another set piece in the scheme of things. It's a tie back to the previous film, but in a way that's like, yeah, I mean, not like something I need to really get the fullest Sonic movie experience, I guess. But, you know, like I said, going into this with fairly modest to low expectations, I think I generally got what I wanted or expected from this film. And so I'll probably have to keep those same modest expectations in check for whenever the third film comes out.
Will Ashton, is this the first decent to good video game movie sequel? Is this the first good video game franchise with more than one movie?
I mean, good is a strong word.
I said decent to good.
Yeah. I mean, more emphasis on the decent than the good, I guess. But in terms of sequels, I guess. I mean,
if we got Silent Hill 2 that owned, then I guess we would have to reevaluate. But I can't think of a sequel, a video game sequel movie that was this watchable, this accessible, this decent. Like, come on, what else do we have? Tomb Raider? I mean, Angry Birds 2, I guess, is the only one.
Maybe. I didn't see that competition. One. Yeah. I mean, I know some people really go to bat for the later Resident Evil sequels, surprisingly.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen those, so I can't speak to those either. I mean, I would say Sonic 2 doesn't hold a candle, in my view, to Detective Pikachu.
I thought you were going to say Mortal Kombat 2.
Oh.
But I like these movies better than Detective Pikachu, but that's that's where Will and I differ. That's for sure.
I guess, yeah.
But okay. I think that about covers it for Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Any last thoughts before We play the Rotten Tomatoes game.
Trying to think. I don't know. I feel like that kind of covers it, really.
I think so. I mean, we can say, of course, that we alluded to this earlier in the show, but demolishing the box office. It's made $141 million worldwide so far, $90 million budget. Really impressive. And I think it's impressive that they kept it under $100 million with as much CGI in this movie as they have, which, yeah, we already talked about basically why we think that is in terms of like the COVID production. However, I got to point out, still only the second biggest opening of the year. I think the biggest opening is still The Batman. So
makes sense.
Yeah. But
I remembered one last thing I was going to say.
Okay.
Which is that even though this movie is considerably longer than the previous Sonic film, Sonic, our title character, takes less opportunities in the previous film to put the Lord's name in vain, which I think is good. And I think that means that he is on the right path to being my brother in Christ. And so that's, I think, something we're champion.
You heard it. You heard it here first. Sonic is a sinner, just like the rest of us.
Sure.
And that's how we work it.
I mean, he has to do more legwork, pun intended, to earn God's goodwill. Because, you know, like, good God point. Didn't make Sonic.
Some other dark deity. Of course, you know,
that's Spock. Sonic is not a
Judeo-Christian
God.
Enterprise,
right? he should fear God as much, if not more, than most of us. So,
wow. Okay, let's play the Rotten Tomatoes game. On that weird note, only 123 reviews have been counted. Like, people aren't bothering reviewing this; they know the score. They're like, "Why would I review this?"
Well,
what
do I know the
what
score?
What do I have to add? You know,
that's
the score?
The question. No, that's what that was teeing you up. I said, "Oh yeah, do I know the score?" That's the question. Yeah.
There you go. 123 reviews have been counted on Rotten Tomatoes. Will Ashen, can you guess the Rotten Tomatoes score?
I feel like it's probably decently high, but maybe not as high as the first one. Because like the first one doesn't have like 80-something percent or something. Like the first,
I'd have to double check. I don't remember.
Yeah. I don't know. I just remember like that's like the highest rated video game adaptation, I think, on Rotten Tomatoes.
No, Werewolves Within. We talked about it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. It used to be, I guess, before that movie came
out.
There
you go.
But I would say Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is at 74%.
No, and it's actually the same RT score as Ambulance, 67%. Huh. And that is higher, I just checked, than the first one. The first one was 63%.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. For some reason, I thought the first Sonic had like a really high score.
It's still going the speed limit. That's what we can gather, huh?
Sure.
Okay.
I guess like a 60-something percent for Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is basically like a 94%.
Okay. All right. Audience score. We have 2,500 plus verified ratings. A ton of verified ratings for this one. People are, they can't wait. They're going fast. They're fast at Rotten Tomatoes. Sure. Tell that website what they think. What do you think?
92%?
It's actually 97%. So also higher than the first Sonic. The first Sonic had a 90. Hold on. Let me. I don't want to say this is wrong. The first Sonic audience score was 93%. So it's kind of funny. It's like it was 63-93, the first one. And the second one is 67-97. How about that? Kind of a weird coincidence.
Sure.
All right, cinema score. What do you think?
You know what? Weirdly, I feel like this is the type of film that gets an A for cinema score.
Spot on. Yeah, absolutely. Is it not an A plus, but definitely an A.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, man.
First one also got an A. Did check that.
I just figured that like if they're giving Sing 2 an A, they're giving Sonic the Hedgehog 2 an A.
All right. This has 25,000 watches on Letterboxd. So fewer critics scored it on Rotten Tomatoes, but more people on Letterboxd put it as their something to watch. So interesting point out there. But yeah, what do you think the average rating is on Letterboxd?
I think it's going to be the same as Ambulance. I think it's going to be a 3.2.
No, 3.4, a little higher. There are some people who are like, you know what? Sonic 2, he gets an extra 0.2. How about that?
Yeah, well, plural, I guess. Or, it, you know, yeah. I don't know where I was going with that.
All right, that's Sonic the Hedgehog 2, now playing in theaters. Oh, boy. So we already talked about this. Next week, we will be talking about RRR, We might also have a chance to talk about Duel again, or at least mention it, since sure. Duel, D-U-A-L, Karen Gillan, and Aaron, what's his name, last name again? Aaron Paul. Aaron Paul, yeah. Mm-hmm. That Riley Stearns film is going to be hitting, I think, limited release this coming weekend. We talked about that one out of Sundance. Great film. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I might try to see that in theaters.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see it in theaters if I could. I mean, the big movie of the weekend is Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore. I'm not sure what it's tracking box office wise. I am not curious, like, how well is it going to do? Because, I mean, Crimes of Grindelwald didn't do super well, right?
Yeah. And I mean, Fantastic Beasts did come out internationally this past weekend, or at least in the UK.
I haven't seen any of the numbers. And I imagine it would probably do better in the UK than here, because I do think that there is more of a backlash to Rowling and Harry Potter right now. But I don't know how much of that is just like Twitter and like online people versus like, I think the Harry Potter fandom is still huge, right?
I mean, I don't know, but I know that in the UK it underperformed rather significantly.
Really?
So it's not looking great for Fantastic Beasts 3, which makes sense because I think even outside of the JK Rowling stuff, I feel like people don't really like or care about this spinoff franchise that much. It's not Harry Potter. It's not, you know, like something, it's just in that Hogwarts world, but it's not the characters that people know and love.
And I think that second movie really soured people on it, you know, because people were defending the first one. I remember the first one came out and it was getting, people were like, you know what, I like this. And I remember being the one was like, right. I'm not into it.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were like, this is a, you know, this and that, you show them some cuss words around. And I'm like, John, it is 2 a.m. where I am. I'm going to bed. You can have this rant tomorrow morning.
There you go. There you go.
But
you see it kind of reflected, right? And the, like, there's very little marketing for this. Like, you didn't even know the subtitle, right?
Yeah. I mean, the weird thing for me was when I saw Sonic the Hedgehog 2, the trailer that they had for Fantastic Beasts for that film, like, really wasn't about Fantastic Beasts. Like, half, if not most of the trailer was just, like, talking about Harry Potter and on Hogwarts and, like, showing fans reacting wildly to Harry Potter footage. And it just seemed like they were really trying to aggressively, like, it felt like a chaos mode where it's, like, you know, crisis mode. Like, they had to, like, really force the whole Harry Potter thing to get it to be appealing to a broad audience.
And there's just, like, so much baggage, man. I mean, you have the Ezra Miller stuff, you have the Johnny Depp stuff. I think it's Mads Mikkelsen now. I think, like, yeah, you have Jude Law's Dumbledore, but it's like, who's excited about a Dumbledore prequel? Like, who?
I mean, if they let Dumbledore be openly gay,
sure, people would be like, that's interesting. Like, that's a different kind of thing, like, that's unique. But, like,
and he has a European vacation or something.
There you go.
But he meets, like, another, you know, at least older wizard.
At least with that first Fantastic Beasts movie, it was in America, so there was, like, a bit of a mystery, sort of like, well, what is the wizarding world like outside of Hogwarts and all this stuff? But yeah, then by the time you get to this movie, it's just sort of like, now we're back, you know, to these characters you already know a lot about. You already know Dumbledore. You already, you know, at this point, we know Newt Scamander and the Eddie Redmayne thing. Is just, I don't know. I don't think there's much appeal there. So I have no interest. There's also Father Stew, which is going to be coming
you
out.
You saw that one.
I saw Father Stew. I did not like it.
Are we discussing that film? Am I seeing that film?
That's up to you, I guess. I wouldn't put you through it. I don't think you'll like it very much. I could see you finding, like, being sort of whatever with it. It's very...
Is Mel Gibson good in it?
No.
He's not?
No,
he's
barely in it. I mean, there are a couple scenes in it where he's doing acting, sure. Like, I'm not going to say that he's, like, a terrible actor or anything. But
sure,
like,
I mean, undeniably charismatic actor. I mean, not a good person in the slightest, but...
Yeah, he's a pretty objectively horrible human being.
Right.
In this movie, he's just kind of like a wet blanket, I guess. Like, I didn't find him popping much at all. I think Jackie Weaver is much more interesting in the movie, personally.
Sure, she's great.
It's not a terrible movie. I didn't like it. I think it was just, it's all over the place. Like, you mentioned, like, you saw the trailer, and the trailer is pretty accurate in the sense of, like, it's like three different movies and it's really badly structured.
Because I saw the trailer before Uncharted and I'm like, oh, you know, it's like Marky Mark in boxer mode again. Like, you know, that's kind of odd. You know, it's been a few, you know, a decade now since The Fighter. Yeah. And, you know, he's, like, probably in his 50s by this point, if not pushing 50. Seems weird that we're doing, oh, he's a priest now. Well, that's kind of a funny turn.
But there's
events,
a whole middle
know.
Thing, and he's trying to be an actor too. Like, it's
okay.
Yeah, I know. I'm telling you, it's all over. But yeah, we'll be talking about RRR for sure. I don't know. We might be talking about The Northman soon because you already saw it. I'll be seeing it in a couple of days. Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, I think we might be talking about in the coming weeks. Yeah. The Bad Guys. Lots of stuff coming up.
Yeah. When does The Bad Guys come out?
Bad Guys, I think, is like the week after next, I want to say, because I see it this weekend. So I think it's the following weekend.
Is that the 22nd as well?
I think that's the 22nd. Let me double check. Okay. Yeah. Opens wide April 22nd.
Okay, so we could probably do a bonus for Northmen and discuss The Bad Guys and Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent for that week.
I mean, yeah, otherwise it would be a big week. But you know what? I think we'll have plenty to say about all three of those movies, I imagine. Let's see.
I heard that. Yeah, Bad Guys, I heard, is actually all right.
Yeah, I've heard good things, but I'm holding out judgment. I haven't... I watched a movie on Saturday. I haven't read the review yet or edited the review we have from Alicia Kelly, who's doing it for the young folks. But I think she liked it quite a bit. So, all right. That'll do it for us, though, on this week's episode of Cinemaholics. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Say hi. We love your emails. We read them. We frame them on our walls. Or at least I do. Will doesn't, can't, he doesn't know about that. But we love your emails. cinemaholicspodcast@gmail.com. You can find all the info on how to connect with us and support us and all that stuff through our show notes below. But we'll be back next week to talk about RRR. Until then, from the Internet California, I'm John Agroni.
And if you're in Pennsylvania, I'm Washington.
See you next time.